Oh, it's like ticking.
Oh,
that's tick, fun.
Tick, tock.
I forgot to make the ticky ticky stop. Hi. So, this is a podcast
called Mysteries,
Murders,
Monsters,
and your mom.
We're the moms.
She's Nicole.
That's Julia.
And we're here.
Okay. Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
It's been a week.
We just had to
do a debrief of like our week, and now we're like sitting here going, oh wait, now we have to concentrate.
It's so, because I know some, like, well, we both listen to a lot of podcasts, and some people really have their shit together. Like, they've got like their intros, they've got their outros, and then there's just us that are like, hey.
Hi, we're here.
Hey.
It's okay.
How you doing?
It doesn't, like...
We're informally formal.
I was listening to one the other day, and they kind of, like, did what we do, where they, like, spoofed... Like, they didn't... Yeah. Like, they were like, what are we doing? Why are we here? Are we here? Like, what's happening?
What's
and I was like...
On?
I'm like, see, that was fine. I wasn't like, oh, my God, you people are so unprofessional.
So, it's Labor Day weekend, which is awesome. That's always a good thing. We love Labor Day weekends. But, so there's this... Who is it? Ryan Reynolds' wife...
Blake Lively.
Yes. Yes. They both seem like... they're like a couple that I like want to be friends with. You know? Like,
I could... Yeah. They're either going to be amazing or you're going to actually be friends with them and be like, oh, you people are ridiculous.
You're like, well, that was very anticlimactic.
That was disappointing. Yes.
But she has... she has something called Betty Buzz, which like if you don't want to drink but you want to look like you're drinking... It's like these little concoctions, and which is cool, but hold on, let me keep going. But anyway, now she has something called Betty Booze, and she has a bourbon and two tequilas, and I'm like, oh, I kind of want this for this weekend, but you can't order it online, and it's only in like 5 stores.
Well, that's dumb.
Right? That's what I said. I was like, well, that's dumb. And I, well, that's what I said. So, and I was like, well, maybe I'll order the Betty Buzz and just add my own liquor to
it. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then I saw the price of Betty Buzz, and it doesn't make sense. For like a 4-pack of these little bottles that has no alcohol in it, mind you, and is mostly sparkling water, it's like $35.
For goodness sakes.
And then the Betty Booze is the same thing. It's, you know, like, it's like a can of, like, the booze.
Like a mixed sparkling.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's only, like, 20. So can somebody please explain to me, that maybe knows more stuff than I do, if anybody is listening, why something with alcohol would be less than something without, alcohol? I do not understand that premise.
I got nothing.
Right. Either way, I still want it. So, Blake Lively, if you happen to be listening, I'll totally take some samplers, you know?
And I'll take some of your husband's gin. Doesn't he have a gin line?
He does. I bought it for Jared a couple times.
I'll take your husband's gin.
Yeah.
Personally.
Sounds weird.
Yeah, I know.
I hate gin. There's one alcohol, no matter how many times I try it, no matter how many variations, drinks mixed in, it's gin. I can't stand it.
I love it.
Tastes like I'm licking a pine tree. And
see, I don't
just...
like piney gin.
They all taste like pine to me.
Really? Because some of them don't to me. Like, I won't drink Tanqueray. That shit's disgusting.
No, like Jared, he had all sorts of gin because he was figure out. He went through like he's still in his gin phase.
Yeah.
But he went through basically all of them. And I tried several of them, and I'm like, this is nasty. So when we go to that restaurant, Noir Dark Spirits in Scranton, we're going for my birthday.
I'm so excited.
Me too. So this is a restaurant that's been around for, I think, 2 years, and I've been wanting to really, really go.
Yeah.
But it's in Scranton, and you got to have a reason to, like, it's not a day trip. It's too far for us to just go drink and then drive home. So anyway, but they came out with their holiday, like their Halloween menu, and there's one called a Witch's Brew. And I was reading the ingredients, and I was like, oh, this sounds amazing. Until I got to the gin.
The gin. I went, woohoo, that's what I'm having.
Like, motherfuckers. And then they even have one that is made with like a red velvet cake, mm-hmm. but they mix it with milk. And I'm like, that's a diarrhea attack waiting to happen.
Oh, yeah.
I will not be drinking that.
No.
So
they do the traditional absinthe pour.
Yeah, they have that for, I think it's just for the Halloween season, they're doing a tableside absinthe, which I might get behind.
Speaking of disgusting. It's so gross.
It's so bad.
We tried it years ago because, like, it's just because you, like, I don't.
It's a novelty.
Because, it, well, the whole thing, it was illegal in the United States for a long time. Yeah. And, like, you know what? I'm going to do, like, an episode about, like, weird drink, like, alcohol, like, stories.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
Like, here's the thing. When it was being made in France during a certain time, mm-hmm. it really was fucking people up. Like,
yeah.
it was really, like, it was bad. It's like, you know, lacing drugs now. Like, not quite
yeah.
that bad. But, like,
yeah, yeah.
you know what I mean? Like, yeah. it was bad. But, like, at some point, the French figured out that this was happening and started to, like...
Maybe we shouldn't do that.
You know, purify it a little bit. Like, mm. they figured it out. But then it became, like, illegal in the United States for this, like, insane period of time.
Right.
Like, I remember, like, when it was, like, you were able to buy it all of a sudden. And it was, like... I'm sorry, like, why was this illegal for, like...
Forever,
for
yeah.
no reason at that point.
Like
no
half
reason.
Of, half of my
so,
life, it was not
yeah,
legal.
So
yeah,
so Bees and I ended up getting some, just to try it, because, like, why
it
not,
like
you
licorice.
Know? Oh, yeah, and that's why I hate it, because
yeah.
I hate licorice. Anything mm-hmm. licorice.
Black Blah. Licorice, star anise, I don't
I mean, like, even with it over the sugar, like, you, if they do the traditional pour, like,
which
if you do
is
it...
what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah, like, if you do it the traditional pour way, which we did at our house,
mm-hmm.
like, it's... better
tolerable
it's better
yeah.
like obviously but like it's still just like why did I
yeah
why did I imbibe that
yeah but anyway gin I don't like gin but Betty Buzz Betty Booze you know
yep. hook us up
let us know we would be glad to sample and taste all of it for you aficionados we are with the liqueurs anyway okay I have a story we're doing one story today because life is hard.
I'll be back next week. I have a plan, though. I am going to start my series about true crime and art,
oh, cool.
art and artists. So,
oh, yeah.
So it's going to be... I'm excited because sometimes it's hard to figure out what you want to be talking about every week. So I have, like, a good, like, chunk of things that I'm going to...
Yeah.
That's in the works. So stay tuned, friends.
So the title of my story is It's in the Cards. And I'm just going to preface with... A good portion of my story is going to be really confusing. And it's because it is confusing. And that's why it took me so long to put this together. Because I'm like, how do I talk about this in a way that is going to make some sort of linear sense? Because it's not linear. Because we're talking about a time period and one thing that changed depending on where you were and...
Oh, like real life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like a multiverse, but in real life. Okay. So... maybe it's the age of Aquarius, but witchy things within the last few years have become super popular and is slowly becoming the norm, such as crystals, astrology, and tarot cards. So tarot cards have always been some interest to me, but I had no idea what I was doing until recently, and I'll talk about like my personal thing with tarot. But the tarot was not always a tool of divination, and so that's what we're going to talk about today is... the origin of the tarot cards and how they came to be the thing that they are now. So our current version of the cards that we call the tarot started out as a card game, which some may say it, you know, it still is, you know, it's just a card game. My husband is one of those people who would be like, but then he asks me to read his tarot and then it's like really funny. So, but like all card games, there's an origin and it changed over the centuries. So playing cards arrived in Italy during the 1370s from Mamluk, Egypt. There was a suit of cups, coins, swords, and polo sticks, and Italy developed its own variations as well as many other countries, and we'll kind of get into that. Tarot cards were invented during the early 15th century with a permanent suit of trumps, also known as trionophi. Whatever. It's those things. Although lost, we know that it had 60 cards. So a lot of these decks, some of them we still have, some of them we don't, some of them we just know through like various writings. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
So it had four kings, 40 pip cards, also known as playing cards, and 16 trumps. 44 plain suited cards were used birds as suits and signs, and the trumps presented 16 Roman gods. Other decks could also be four face cards, 21 trumps, and a fool, which is a suitless card that excuses the player from following the suit. There's also a French tarot, aka Jeu du Tarot, I just sounded like I actually spoke French. it has 56 cards, 4 suits, 22 atus, aka trumps. Each suit is 14 cards, 10 pips, 4 face cards, king, queen, knight, and a jack. The atus are 1 through 20, and non-number card, the fool. All right, but the game. So this was confusing to me too. But anyway, the rule is that a player who cannot follow to a trick with a card of the suit that's being led must play a trump to trick if possible. So you have to win the final trick, and when you do win, you win a set number of points, and then you keep doing this until whomever like has it. Kind of reminds me of slapjack.
Mm-hmm.
Does that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, or like war or something.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Like, or like Go Fish. I don't, yeah. Even Uno to an extent.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of
like a very basic, like,
yeah,
way of winning a game type thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So much
like we're not playing spades here.
No. Or I don't know Uno, man, and slapjack.
So I grew up playing cards. My mom and her friends would have like Pinochle Night, and mm-hmm. like my grandparents had Pinochle Night. And then I went to college.
Does anyone have to pee on anyone's knuckles? Is that why it's called that?
I don't know why it's called that, but it's similar. It's similar to spades, which I played when I was in my early 20s and whatnot.
Yeah.
But they're similar games. It's about you have to like you have to look at your hand, and you have a partner, and you can't see what they have, and yeah. you have to like do a. Like a bet, basically. Like you have to say, I'm gonna win this many hands.
Oh.
And if you don't win, like yeah. you lose points. Like if you don't win the number, like if you and your partner don't win the number of hands that you say you're gonna win, then you lose points.
Seems utterly so astoundingly confusing.
It's not really confusing, but it is like difficult. And that's how like you would play with the same, like games like that, you would end up playing with the same people. That's why like bridge
yeah.
clubs and like
yeah
because you like have your partner, like you have like you know right. each other, like I don't know, like it's a cool, but there is a cool thing about that, like yeah. you know, they like my family, that's what they did all the time.
That's
like just
cool.
sit around playing cards. And
my mom played solitaire and taught me that, and my grandmother had an old deck for slapjack, and then I learned how to play slapjack, and then along the lines came Uno, and then that's
where it stops,
and
yeah.
that's basically yeah, where it is.
My husband's not a card, like he does not into playing cards, so I've yeah. taught Zoe how to play 500 Rummy, because like I grew up playing 500 Rummy with my grandmother, because you don't need four people, like yeah. other games like that, you need like multiple. Yeah.
Oh, and Go Fish,
obviously.
Yes, yes.
But so I've taught Zoe how to play 500 Rummy, but it's funny because like everyone plays it a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Like my grandmother and I kind of like had our rules, like how yeah. we played, because she'd let me stay up super late and watch Johnny Carson and play 500 Rummy when
That's
I was
awesome.
A kid.
Yeah.
And we have like our rules. And I remember playing one time, we were camping and playing with Beez's family, like his mm-hmm. parents, like his mom and his sister and like Reagan.
Yeah.
And I was like dying because I'm like, oh wait, I'm like, they did something. And I was like, you can do that, like, oh, like they totally
yeah.
have a rule, which I don't know which one is which, and I don't yeah. know, like, I don't know what the right rule is.
Right.
It's I just know how rule. I play it.
Yeah.
So like I've taught Zoe how to play it my way.
Yeah.
And I was like, so if you go down to your grandparents and it's different, that's why. It was like
just so you know, FYI.
She'll be really mad about and really confused because she's that person.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's okay. It's cool. It fits the story. So much like today's cards, artists were commissioned to create the decks. And in Milan, there was the Tarot of Marcellus, and that spread to France and Switzerland in the 16th century, which led to Austria and parts of West Germany in the 18th century. And this deck was called the Tarot. Okay, so the Visconti Sforza Tarot refers to 15 decks of incomplete sets of cards, which are now in various museums, libraries, and private collections that were made for the rulers of Milan and commissioned by Filippo Maria Visconti, the Duke of Milan.
Cool.
But they don't tell you, most of these, they don't tell you who the artists are. They just tell you who commissioned the cards.
No, because it wouldn't have been considered, and I don't mean to jump in again, but
no,
it wouldn't
fine.
Have been considered a fine art.
Right.
So, like, even in that time, like people don't realize this, but like landscape paintings,
mm-hmm.
that was trash.
Yeah.
That was not considered fine art. That
yeah.
was trash. So like imagine a step down where you're
right,
commissioning
just making cards.
Yeah.
yeah.
Landscape painting didn't become famous or didn't become an accepted art form till hundreds of years
and
later.
And some of these cards, though, are so pretty. So some of them are in sheets, like you would think, you know, like you make a giant print of something and it looks like they had to cut them to some degree. So they're sheets that just look like it's just basic ink stains. And then there are others that I think are these cards where they have the artwork and then behind the picture of whatever person is on the card, it's almost embossed with some sort of texture. Mm-hmm. And they're so pretty. But again, you know, they're just playing cards.
Well, because it would have been like an artisan of some sort that did it, like, you know, or like someone who worked for a painter, like as a side thing maybe or something. But
so the most popular version of cards is called the Tarot of Marcellus, which is 78 cards. And we could go through all the variations of this game because there are a lot, in case you haven't gotten that thus far. But the purpose of this story, we are going to focus on this specific deck. So the Tarot of Marcellus is one of the standards that our modern tarot is derived. There's a lot of back and forth from French decks and Italian decks, so we'll go over a few. So for example, like the French had La Force, which means strength, and in Italy they had Fortitude. The French had Le Amorax, or the Lovers, and the Italian had L'Amour, which just means love, and then there was like a Judgment card, and then so on and so forth. They had also Hermits, Trumps, a Hunchback, Old Man, aka Time, the Hanged Man, or the Traitor, and so on. So like the cards were kind of the same, but like there were different variations of the cards. So that's really what I'm trying to preface here.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, language alone, like, you know, it's just translation too.
And also for a fun reference from a previous episode, there was a card of the Pope, which also had female representation. And although there's no evidence of this, but the speculation says that the card was based around the myth of Pope Joan.
No, Pope Joan!
Right? Yeah. So now the reason there was a deck in France was also to make a competing deck with the Tarot of Marcellus as a new base for the game, but it was not as successful. So it didn't really, I mean, people used it, but it didn't take off the way that this deck did. Okay, so the point of all this is to tell you that Tarot, or Tarocchi was, from what we know, made as a card game that lasted for centuries, and depending on what region you were playing in, the game and the cards would change slightly. So where does our tarot come from? Because that's the whole point. The earliest evidence of these decks being used for what is known as cartomancy, it means fortune telling. It's a form of divination. Comes from documents back in 1750. And these documents were trying to put divinatory meanings to the Tarocchi Bolognese decks, which is an Italian deck. But the esoteric tarot didn't become popular until the 1780s, first with a man named Antoine Quart. He would eventually call himself Anton Quart de Gebelin, and he was an amalgamation of like many things. But he was a supporter of the American independence and rubbed elbows with people like Ben Franklin and others. So that's kind of where his semi-claim to fame goes. But he also did some really cool things. He eventually becomes known for being the grandfather of modern occultism, hermeneutics, which is the theory of mythology and interpretation, and the origin of language. And he even presented during his time a dictionary of etymology. So that's really cool.
That's super cool.
He was all into, you know, language and where language comes from. And
fascinating.
Right? In 1781, he wrote an essay called Le Monde Primitive Analyse et Compare avec Le Monde Modern, or I'll say it in English and say it better, The Primeval World Analyzed and Compared to the Modern World. There is a chapter on tarot, and he says the first time he saw a deck that his perception was that they held secrets of the Egyptians. He even went further to create a story of the tarot that Egyptian priests had distilled the ancient book of Thoth, but I think it's the ancient book of the dead, but whatever, into these images. These were brought to Rome, where they were secretly known to popes, who then brought them to Avignon, in the 14th century, and they were produced in France. And according to another essay by Combe de Mellet, He states that, quote, de Gebelin's essay is responsible for the mystical connection of the cards and gave the suggestions for cartomancy. But then 2 years after this essay, Jean-Baptiste Elliot wrote Attila, or AKA, a way to recreate yourself with a deck of cards called Tarot. It was the first book with, it doesn't matter. It was the first book with instructions on how to read the tarot, and not to be outdone, he states that way before de Court wrote his essay, he wrote one in 1751 and introduced the idea of the tarot being used for divination, which is partially true. So in 1770, he wrote a way to recreate yourself with a deck of cards, not the tarot, just simply cards. Mm. In his essay, he details what we call spreads and what each placement for the card means. He also wrote about the card meaning upright and in reverse, or aka upside down, as they still are used today. Also in this essay, he claims he learned all of this from a man from Italy. So Jean would go even further, and in 1788 he formed the Society of Performers of the Book of Thoth. I think it's Thoth, like you don't enunciate the T. It's Thoth or Thought, Toth, whatever. It's T-H-O-T. It was a French-speaking group that continued the conversation of tarot interpretation. Following this, he created and published a special deck just for divination that brought all of his ideas together, making the first deck of cards specifically designed for occult purposes. So in 1789, the first deck of tarot for divination was published. Then, if that wasn't enough, in 1790, he founded the New School of Magic and followed with the theoretical and practical course of the Book of Thoth. Yeah, because I spelled it wrong. That's why. All right. This is important because it includes reworkings of the cards, creating what we now call the major and minor arcana, as well as the representation of the four elements in astrology. So, although, like, people had the idea that the cards held divination meanings, the where we get the main idea for our current cards comes from Jean-Baptiste Elliot, and because now most of, like, all of our cards represent, like, astrological signs, a certain element, and then we have the minor and the, I'll go through all of this, but the major and the minor arcana as well. Okay. I'm going to skip this part because it becomes redundant when I get to the end. Okay. I will tell you that, all right, so the first card is the Fool, and it starts with the number zero, and it is synonymous with beginnings. But from the Fool card, we continue following the Fool through his journey through the rest of the major arcana cards. It's a story. It's meant to be a metaphor for the journey through life, and each card of the major arcana represents a stage of that journey. So the minor arcana is, like, again, I'll go into this, but the major arcana starts with the Fool, and you follow the Fool all the way to the end. Mm. Because it's supposed to be a story about, like, growth and...
Yeah.
Anyway.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Okay, so now that we have a basic understanding of how our current tarot game came to be, let's continue. And I'm going to start with a man who is a reoccurring theme for our podcast. He even has his own song by Ozzy, and if you don't know who I'm referring to by those two hints, I'm talking about Aleister Crowley. Fucking Crowley, like, what the hell? This is, like, what, 4 episodes now?
Yeah.
5, because you mentioned him in one of yours.
I think so, yeah.
Whatever. All right, so Crowley is known for lots of things that we've already discussed, and if you don't know what those are, please search back through our episodes, because I think we did one episode.
You did a whole episode on him.
And
it's, like, you know why he's in everything? Because he was bananas.
Yeah, because he was in everything.
He was bananas, and he was just jumping around, just like, whatever, I'm going to do it.
Oh, my God, he had a spell fight.
I know, like, it's crazy. Like,
it's amazing.
Like, yeah.
I wonder if that were J.K. Rowling got her inspiration from, was just, like, the two men, like, hurling curses at each other.
Like, I feel like probably, but who knows?
Because that should just be a movie, and it, like, okay, anyway, so... Okay, Crowley wanted to create something that updated the traditional pictorial symbols of the tarot. What was intended to be a 6-month project ended up taking 5 years. So to align his deck, he wrote the Book of Thoth in 1944, his own book. He changes the deck according to him. The Book of Law gives a perfect symmetry in the zodiacal attribution, just as if a loop were formed at one end of the ellipsis. to correspond exactly with the existing loop at the other end. Whatever. He moved the cards basically to make them align with the zodiac, essentially. And as I mentioned, he wanted to change the deck, not just the alignment, but also the depictions within. So Lady Frieda Harris was entrusted to paint them. And I'm sure she was mentioned in the episode I did of Crowley because she ended up at various points in his life becoming very important, and she cared for him at the end of his life. So,
yes, I remember.
Yeah. So at the age of 60, Frieda was invited to help Crowley on his project. Mind you, he had asked two people prior to her. And they didn't show up, so.
He's like, I guess you'll have to do.
He'll do, bitch. Initially, Crowley wanted the deck to be more traditional, but it was Harris that encouraged him to commit to his practices and scientific views and create something different. She was also a crucial part of the deck being published and helped solidify monetary backers. She also insisted that she kept her own anonymity throughout the project. And this book and the cards were published in 1944, and there were 200 copies initially printed. Sadly, neither of them would live to see this project in print and in publication.
Yeah.
Now, for those of you who aren't art buffs, here's a tidbit of facts that you might like, and I was really, like, aiming for you on this one. So, she did paint these, and she, to make money, she would show them in galleries, and like, and that's how she made her money initially. Cool. But the original paintings were done on watercolor paper and then affixed to some sort of a thick backing. Mm-hmm. And the acidity from that backing resulted in discoloration of the borders and to some degree to the paintings themselves. Yes. The paintings required cleaning and then small, like, repairs of small tears. And in 2011, the restoration project was completed, and they are currently owned by the Warburg Institute at the University of London. So when you go to London and you want to check them out,
all right,
that's where they are.
Well, and, you know, if you don't know, art friends or non-art friends, so, like, we now use all non-acidic papers and backings and, like, yeah. And it's a whole thing. But yes, that's what, like, the whole art restoration movement in a lot of ways is just trying to take care of the damage.
Oh my gosh, from... have you seen what they're, so they have paintings of, the one I watched was of a woman and they didn't know who she was. Mm-hmm. And there was all of this, like all these theories about, oh, she's this person. I think at one point they thought she was like the Queen of Scots or something, but they were examining the painting and they noticed that there was like, kind of like painting over something. Mm-hmm. And they
it happens
were
all the time.
Yeah, so and they were able to wash the painting and somehow get the second or third layer off, and at the top left corner was a small, like, somebody put like a tag, like they painted like a tag on it, and they put this woman's name on the painting.
That's awesome.
And so now they know now who they she know. Is. Yeah.
I saw a much more disturbing story recently.
Oh god.
No, like, just timely, I guess, but it was a painting from, I want to say, New Orleans, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, whatever.
Yeah.
But it was of this family. It was like three kids, but, you know, it's like all old, and
yeah.
And when they restored it, they found another person in the painting, and it was a African-American boy. Yeah. Who was part of the family. Like, he was considered part of the family.
Yeah.
And at some point, someone covered him up because as the painting went through, like, where...
Like, generations.
As people became more hateful and terrible, yeah. It became covered up. And when they, like, cleaned it, like, he was clearly, like, part of their family, yeah. And considered part of their family. And it was covered up, and now it's yeah. not. And
right, which is great.
And it was New Orleans, because they were... I think it was New Orleans. Oh, my God. It's going to the Met. It's going to be hanging in the Met now.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy that was writing the article was mad because he's like, you know, they should have, like, done something with this in our own city to show our own history.
Absolutely.
And show the,
yeah.
But, like, they got rid of it. But, I mean, it's cool. It will now be shown with, the restored with the whole, you know, family. But, so the restorations are interesting because a lot of times, sometimes it's because of age and wear and tear, and then sometimes it's because people covered shit up.
Yeah.
Like, they're just like, yeah, I don't like the way this is anymore, so let me cover it up.
And paint over it.
Things like that really...
It's crazy.
Infuriating.
But it's also cool that we have the technology and people with the know-how to do it.
Oh my God, and the process itself, I did... Okay, so 20-some years ago, I was an art history museum studies major, and I took one class on restoration. I am not sciencey enough to be one of those people, but the stuff that they do is so freaking cool.
Awesome.
And it's so, like, you have a fucking Da Vinci in your hands and you have to not fuck it up. Like, yeah,
see, that's too much. That's too much pressure for me personally. I do find it fascinating,
it's
the
so
restoration
cool. Yeah,
process,
it's so cool.
But I, yeah, no, just give me like a no name somebody and I'll
oh,
no,
you know, right. Like, let's play it with
let's
this
to practice on it. All right.
But yeah, sorry.
So that's okay. So possibly the most used deck is the Rider-Waite-Smith deck. This deck was created by actually two members of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, which was an Aleister Crowley-based group. And they, based on the instructions of A.E. Waite, the deck was illustrated by Pamela Coleman Smith. They were published in 1909, and some of the cards were changed. Like, the Papess was changed to the High Priestess. The Lovers were changed from a clothed man and woman receiving a blessing from a cleric or a religious person to a naked Adam and Eve in the garden. There were also changes to accommodate the astrological correspondences, such as, for the best and easiest example, is that they changed Justice to align with Libra. Because, you know,
yeah,
the scales, Justice, Libra,
yeah,
it's like a whole
sense
thing. So the cards themselves are original works of art by Smith. Most likely, she was working off the direction from Waite, especially for the major arcana. But with the minor arcana, she had more freedom to design with just his notes. And there was not really a lot of instruction for her off of those. Like, she kind of just took her own direction. Mm. He was focused on the major arcana. So this was released in England in 1909. And at the time, it was just called Tarot Cards, accompanied by A.E. Waite's guide called The Key of the Tarot. The next year when the drawings, and then the next year is when all of the drawings were added. This deck was often called the Rider Tarot, then the Rider-Waite Tarot, but would eventually become known as the Waite-Smith Tarot and the Rider-Waite-Smith Tarot. So many feel that Smith's major contributions to the deck as we know it should also be noted with her name on the mm-hmm. deck. It's her illustrations that till this day live on and have been reproduced 1,000 times. So the back of the original cards had roses and lilies, and these cards were released with a limited number. And then in 1910, the cards were reprinted, but on the back of the deck, it had a cracked mud design, and this was referred to as the A deck. And then the decks continued to be printed until 1939, and then there was a pause, and none were printed until...
Because of a war.
Yeah, so... So, just an FYI.
I don't need tarot to see the future right now. There's bombs falling on my house. I'm good.
There's
sorry,
just,
that was me just being
could
an
there
ass.
Be more than one tower in the deck? Because I only have tower moments happening. Okay, so...
Sorry, that was me being an asshole.
No, you're good. Well, speaking of, where... Oh, there it is. Okay, so never mind. I'll get to that. I just jumped ahead and was questioning what I've done.
I do that all the time.
Okay, so they restarted printing in 1971 to 1977, and then in 2009, U.S. Game Systems published a commemorative deck titled the Smith-Waite Centennial Deck, and it was part of the Pamela Coleman Smith commemorative set, which celebrated the 100-year anniversary of the original deck from 1909, and this also gives her name like top billing, as it
nice.
Should, because
yeah.
Like the meanings, like the guy wanted to redo this and he wrote the meanings, which is fine, but it really, when anybody is reading tarot, a lot of times it comes down to like they may refer to the book,
mm-hmm.
but it comes down to like the illustrations, and she did that. Okay, so that's the history of tarot. Like, so essentially Jean-Baptiste, whatever his name was, gave us the divination of tarot and gave us the original cards as well as the major and minor arcana. People still use Aleister Crowley's book. I personally never have. But, and then it came down to A.E. Waite and Pamela Coleman Smith, who gave us the decks that we have now. Also, for a fun tidbit, because, you know, things are copyrighted, these cards were copyrighted until... I think it was either the 70s or the 80s, and
yep.
then the copyright expired,
mm-hmm.
which gave other artists license
public domain
to recreate the cards
mm-hmm.
in their own images, and they have. And I mean, you could go, you
that's
even,
why there's so many now,
right?
Like
you can go into Barnes and Nobles and there's like 50 different tarot
yeah,
decks.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a really, really, really simplification of what the cards mean and how to read them. Just to note, like, this also takes, like, time and study, like, anything. my first deck was when I was 14. And until like 2 years ago, I swear to God, nothing about the cards clicked in, and it didn't matter how many times I tried to read them, what different decks that I used, how many times like I read the book and made notes, it wasn't clicking until like 2 years ago. Even still, I don't read for anyone but myself and a few close friends and family, and that's it. So that's my history with tarot. And for a fun fact, my first tarot, the reason why I had it when I was 14, because at the time I was getting YM magazine.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There was always like one part of the year, it was always, and it's probably October.
Oh, I'm sure.
Was always dedicated to like numerology, your horoscope.
Yes.
All sort of astrological things. My God. But in this particular month, they added and it reminds me of, like, I told you it came in sheets.
Yeah.
That's what it reminds me of. It was they were little squares, and it was a tarot deck that you ripped out of the magazine, and like, you know, they're all perforated edges, so you had to take the cards apart one by one.
Yeah,
so that was my first tarot deck.
Dude.
And then eventually,
sorry, I'm having like weird flashbacks to old magazines.
Isn't it weird?
Kids. Like,
so, and then after that, so Enchanted Hollow, or as we call it, the fairy store that is in Wellsboro now, around this time, when I was 13, 14, actually first opened in Westfield, mm-hmm. where I lived. And they were on the corner, like right at the end of Main Street, or like where the Main Street buildings end. And I think I got my first tarot deck there. Where that deck is, I have no fucking clue. Yeah, and then from there, I just kind of kept trying, and it just wasn't working, and I was like, maybe it's just me. Anyway, whatever. That's my history. Whatever. Nobody cares. So, let's go. The tarot deck has 78 cards. There are 22 major arcana cards that represent life's karmic and spiritual lessons. They represent a path to spiritual awareness, and they depict various stages that we encounter through our lives. And these cards hold, you know, meaningful lessons. So I'm going to give you the cards, their name, and a really like 1 to 2 word brief description about them. Okay, so as I mentioned, the first card, which is also attributed with the number 0, is the Fool. And the Fool represents essentially beginnings, and it can also mean that the person that you're reading for and or yourself is a bit naive, very like hopeful. Like, I mean, the Fool has like a rack sack on his back and is literally getting ready to step over the edge of something. So it could also, like, in, if you look at just that meaning, it could mean you're on the precipice of something, but whatever. All right, the Magician. The Magician means manifestation, essentially. And you could also learn from him. The High Priestess, it represents the divine feminine and sacred knowledge. The Empress is, you know, nurturing, because the Empress depicts usually a woman who is pregnant beside like a flowing stream. The Emperor signifies authority and can be a father figure. The Hierophant symbolizes traditions, religious beliefs, and again, is somebody that you can learn from. The Lovers mean, you know, love and relationships. It doesn't mean like, it just, whatever. The Chariot usually simplifies control, success. Strength is obviously strength and courage. The Hermit is introspection, soul searching. The Wheel of Fortune represents life's cycles and karma. Justice is obviously fairness and truth. The Hangman represents like new perspectives, because he's literally upside down. Death is usually endings and transformations. Temperance is balance and moderation. The Devil can mean your shadow self or addiction, or it could be literally somebody who's in your life that's very devilish. The Tower represents chaos and sudden change. The Star represents purpose and renewal. The Moon is your subconscious. And also a lot of times things are not what they seem. The Sun is positivity and warmth. Judgment is obviously judgment and also absolution. And finally, the last card is the World, which signifies completion and accomplishment. There you go. All right, so the Minor Arcana, I did not explain this, because are considered lesser cards. They represent the now. Things that, so like if you get a majority of Major Arcana, these are things that are like larger lessons in your life that you need to deal with that will possibly be continuing for like longer periods of time. But if you get mostly minor arcana cards, it's that something in your life is happening right now, and this is what you need to focus on. Things that you can easily and quickly change, whereas major arcana usually is not something that is quick and easy. Okay. There are the cups, which represents, there are 56 cards broken into four suits with 10 number cards and four court cards. And the cups represents feelings and emotions. The pentacles are finances, work, and material objects. The swords represent thoughts, words, and actions. And the wands are energy, motivation, and passion. So each suit includes court cards such as a page, knight, queen, and a king. Court cards, when read, often represent a person, either yourself or someone else, and the court cards will reflect those personality traits of that person. Okay. Oh, I already said this, but I'm going to repeat myself because I bet I put it better. Yeah. Okay. Getting mostly minor cards in a reading suggests that you are dealing with a day-to-day issue that are just passing through and present you with an opportunity to learn from the experiences. Whereas having mostly major arcana cards suggests that you were in the middle of life-changing events that could have long-term effects and ask you to pay attention in order to make further progress. So the spreads, like I mentioned, are the way which you lay out the cards. Each positioning of the card has a different meaning, and the cards will answer the question based off of where it's placed. The easiest spread is the three-card spread that represents the past, the present, and the future. And if you ever got a tarot reading from an actual, like, super good tarot card reader, most of the time, the Celtic cross is used. It's a much bigger card spread. I don't ever read this because I can't. It's too much information, and I can't do it. So it's 10 cards. Again, it represents the past, the present, your future, your goals, your subconscious, advice from the universe, your external influences, your hopes, your fears, and then eventually your outcome. But there's no set spread that any reader must use. You just kind of use what works for you. Like, I always use the past, present, future. Like, I don't read beyond that typically, unless a card falls out. And then sometimes I read the card that's at the bottom of the deck. So there are interchangeable spreads depending on what you want to know. And then many times during like moon phases or like the celestial holidays, you can find spreads that will address those holidays specifically. Everyone that reads tarot has their own way of doing them. And it's helpful to learn the basics and start there and then slowly, like anything, adding your own niches to it. It's custom, but doesn't have to be, that someone buys you your first deck. If you start reading like me, you'll end up buying lots of different decks and only actually use one. The artwork for the decks ranges from everything you can possibly think of. For example, they made a tarot deck off of the show Supernatural, which I kind of actually secretly, not so secretly, want because I fucking love that show.
I just saw a Stranger Things one, I think.
Yeah, they have everything.
It's like everything.
Everybody reads differently. So I have a friend who doesn't read the court cards. Like, she's taken them out of her deck. She doesn't read them. I don't read in reverse. Mm-hmm. I personally don't. I think the cards are what they are. They don't need to be read like upside down. And the deck that I use for, like, if I read for other people, does not read in reverse. There's no reverse meanings to it. And I've kind of adapted to that because it just kind of sits well with me. But that doesn't mean that if you get your own deck that you shouldn't read things upside down if that's what, you know, resonates with you. It's not a one-size-fits-all thing here. So I have a steampunk deck. I have a dark woods deck, aka a shadow deck, that is incredibly gorgeous and is illustrated by an artist named Abigail Larson. And she has an Instagram account with so much good artwork, and you should go check it out. I have a Norse deck that also integrates runes. And then there's other decks that I've started with and then I just keep because I like them. I have a deck that I've had for probably 20 years. It's just there. Yeah. Anyway, so after hearing all of this and you think, wow, I want to learn tarot. This sounds amazing. I want to see into my future. But that's not really a thing. I should say.
Sorry, that was hilarious.
Like, that's not how it works. So, like, the choices that you make on an everyday basis will change the direction of your future. There is no one set path in your life. So the tarot is not going to be like, 6 months from now, this is going to happen with you. So like, it may suggest that this might happen, but yeah.
But you could derail that
very fucking easily. Yes.
Pretty easily. Yeah.
So, let me give you two sites that I really love to consult when I'm reading that I find like incredibly helpful. So Biddy Tarot, B-I-D-D-Y, Tarot is the first.
I like it.
Yes. It is a massive online collection that gives in-depth information on each card, including the reversal, which, you know, I did not go into. She has online classes. She does a Tarot 101. She has all the meanings of every single card. So when I went through the meanings, just to be like really quick, I used the Biddy Tarot site to do some of that. And the other is called This Might Hurt Tarot. And the girl that runs the website is Isabella Rotman, and she has her own cards and she runs the website. And I think she's on her third tarot card release, but her illustrations are just fabulous. And this, I love this, like one, the deck is amazing, but also the site and the meanings will give you a straight to the point meaning of each card. There is no sugarcoating at any, like fucking anything. That's why it's called This Might Hurt Tarot. Mm. She also, what she does with her cards is that she's gender inclusive.
Oh, nice.
So if that speaks to you, this would be a good website and this would be like a good deck to get, because they're like a lot of the cards have like that feminine masculine representation.
Which makes sense based on how long ago they were created.
But not only that, but like, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to represent you,
right?
Because a lot of times if you're reading for a deck, that maybe the card is trying to get you to notice somebody, and it may be somebody of that gender, or it may be like a woman in your life that just has massive masculine qualities, you know?
Right. And that's true. It can be adaptive.
Right.
I'm just saying it makes sense that like more traditional, more traditional tarot interpretations would lean towards that because of the, you know.
Right. So like it doesn't, because I think like the feminine and masculine, like there isn't an erasure of it, but her deck is more inclusive to
that. That's cool, though.
So This Might Hurt Tarot, Isabella Rotman, and Biddy, B-I-D-D-Y, Tarot are the two places that I would start if you're going on like a tarot journey, or you just want to see if it's something that you're into and thought maybe, well, I've always been interested, maybe I'll start. But again, it takes time and practice. I've been doing it since I was 14. I'm 40 years old. You do the math. And up until like, I'm not joking. Up until like 2 years ago, shit just did not click. And I was like, well, what does it even mean? I don't get it. I'd read the meaning of a card and I'd be like, well, okay, what does it mean? it just didn't click. And then like one day I read for myself and it was like, moments. Yeah. And that's what happened. And it was cool. But there are some things like astrology. I don't understand your birth charts or the maps, and no amount of studying will I understand them. I have a friend who does do that. Mm-hmm. She will not be doing them anytime soon, so I'll wait until she's ready to do them again. And then, you know, I'll, you know, give her like a little plug. But she did my birth chart and it was crazy spot on. Like, so whether you believe in any of this shit or not is completely up to you, and personally I don't give a fuck. But I will say that I don't believe in coincidence. I think that everything aligns and happens at the right time for right reasons, and there's no coincidence to it. And after she went through my birth chart and where all the planets aligned, when I was born, where they're going, where I am in my life, it was just so eerily spot on that I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely something to it, but it's an art form and I can't do it. I'm not into that.
I think it's really interesting too, so I'm going to go back to the symbols for a second, because I'm the art person and I'm always thinking about symbols. And so like art history is basically looking at, and like Bees and I'll argue about this and we're not going to get into that right now, but like art history is basically looking at artwork and interpreting it based off of symbols. Mm-hmm. Because we have modern artwork from like a certain period forward where we have an understanding of what the artist's intentions were because
right.
they were present enough to write about it or whatever. Right. But when you look at things from like, you know, ancient Egypt or like the Renaissance or, you know, mm-hmm. like Middle Ages, like you don't, like the artist wasn't give, like they didn't have a little card next to their painting.
Right. They didn't come with a book.
Yeah. So, but what is interesting to me about the tarot is the symbols that are used are similar to the symbols you would use, like when you're interpreting like artwork, basically.
Right.
Like these things are symbols that people use regularly to mean certain things. Like, you know, there's so many paintings that like you can go through and these were symbols set in that time. So like you're not interpreting beyond like when that time period was. You're
right.
like during this time, this would have definitely been a symbol for fertility or for
right.
like this or
yeah.
that or the other thing. And it's interesting because the thing I'm getting to is that it's cool to me how these symbols have like stood the test of time and are still
yeah.
the symbols. Like when you went through that list, it's all, a lot of those symbols are symbols that you would have, you know, have been used in like, it's just fascinating to
yeah.
me. Like
yeah.
how powerful a symbol can be.
Right.
Like symbols are super powerful and people do not.
Well, yeah, they are.
People don't get it. Like,
yeah.
you know, it's even like a conversation that I probably shouldn't have on here. But it's like, you know, we talk about ideologies and people that like pledging themselves to symbolism and to
yeah.
symbols because people can take those symbols and manipulate them to mean something else or
mm-hmm.
do something else with it. And like, it's just, it's fascinating. Also terrifying.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
anyway, that was really cool.
Yeah.
Like I'm like listening and I'm like, oh yeah, that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Because those have been symbols of that for, you know.
For forever. Yeah.
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 But they still are, which is.
But I also think that it's interesting, like, well, because I never thought about it, like, where did tarot come from? And, like,
yeah.
There, just to, like, just to be clear, there is zero evidence that tarot came from Egypt, that the symbol came from Egypt. It's just what this one guy thought.
Right.
It was, like, his intuition said that it came from here, but also, like, not to take it with, like, a grain of salt because of what his job was.
Well, yeah,
like,
but, like,
he was into the history of language and, like,
right.
so he must have, based off of his own knowledge, saw something and was able to connect the dots, but was never able to back it up with
well,
any
and
sort
it's
of
an proof. Early, Egypt's an early civilization. We go back to Egypt for so many things, true or untrue, because
right.
it's such an early,
but it,
advanced civilization.
And it amassed a huge, long period of time.
Right, it's over such a huge period of time. But honestly, a lot of the symbols really go back to Greek and Roman mythology, too.
Yeah.
Like, you know, which, anyway, it's
yeah.
all,
yeah, yeah.
it's half a dozen of one or the other. Like,
right.
it's all, they're all dealing with, so symbols come out because you have these problems in your life or you have these things that are happening that are meaningful. So, like, you're always going to have symbols about, like, fertility.
Mm-hmm.
And you're always going to have, you know, symbols about, like, fidelity or symbols about like strength and power or
mm-hmm.
wisdom because
right.
like these are things that were important to people
right.
and all ancient religions have some way of focusing on those
yeah.
in some way. And so like you're always
well, like,
going to have those.
The symbol for infinity
right
is on a lot of the cards
mm-hmm.
and even like the symbol for like male female is on a lot of the cards
yeah.
and yeah.
It's just, I mean, it's just, it makes sense. Like,
yeah.
you could have basically looked at, you know, the walls of any ancient civilization and found a lot of these symbols interspersed.
Like hanging out somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Because, you know, people communicated through symbols because written language was the way we think about written language and everything else, like reading books and things, is such a modern
yeah.
established convenience. Like people didn't know how to read. They talked to each other through symbols. Like
right.
and that's why Egypt is the great example, because hieroglyphs are symbols. Their language was symbols. Like
yeah. Yeah.
this is how we communicate in a written format, is with symbols. And
yeah.
so it's why it's easily, you know, interpreted that way.
Yeah. And then there's so much about Egypt we don't even know.
Oh yeah.
So much of it's like gone.
Well, yeah, grave robbers.
Well, also because like Alexandria is mostly underwater now.
Well, yeah.
And like we like lost a lot of it. And then yeah, grave robbers, but also because the way that like the weather patterns work and like the sand. So like
oh, yeah, the Sphinx, like they uncover things all the time.
Yeah, so like the Sphinx was under the sand for a mm-hmm. long, long time. Yeah. And then because of the way the weather works and the sand blew away and magically mm-hmm. there it is. But
well, yeah. And I want to be clear, when I say grave robbers, I don't even mean like modern European people. I mean like way back when.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
way
yeah.
back when, like, oh, there's this like tomb over here. They buried people with, you know, all their riches.
So if you I don't know, so what, shit. I can't remember his name. Hiawassee. No, that's not his name. It's okay, so he's like the Egyptologist.
Oh yeah,
that I guy. Don't think he works for the Museum of Egypt anymore, but he's still like the Egyptologist. He was here in Philly back in June, and I really, really, really wanted to go see him, but I didn't because it was like $90. Anyway, he hosts a lot of shows where he will take cameras with him as he's discovering these tombs, and he'll show you. He's like, this is the work of grave robbers. You know, typically this would be here, but it's not now because grave robbers yeah. did A, B, C, and D. Mm-hmm. And but also, like, can you blame them? Like, most of the time, these people were fucking poor and yeah, starving.
And you buried these kings with, like,
right, all of their riches and gold
and food.
Yeah.
Like, just even, like, food and, like, things that you would want, like, grain or whatever, like, whatever. Like, it was, like,
you, they were
everything
offerings.
You needed for, no, it was everything you needed for the afterlife. Like, I'm going to go and I'm going to need all of these things once I get there. And that's why they put, I mean, some of it's an offering, but a lot of it's, like, the necessity part was stuff you're going to need when you yeah. get to, that's why they, like, yeah, like, oh, well, you're going to need grain to make bread when you get to
right?
the, like, yeah. or beer or whatever. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was all this, like preparation. Like, it's like fucking doomsday preppers, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
For the afterlife. Doomsday yeah. prepping for the afterlife. I've just explained Egypt. No, I'm just kidding.
No, but that would make a great book.
Yeah.
Write it right. now.
Okay. I'll get right on that.
Right now. Well, that's it.
All right, friends. That was fun. I'm glad you finally did that story. We've talked about it for ages. I'm excited, everyone, next week. I've got a plan. True crime art. Yeah, I got a plan.
We're mixing Nicole's two great loves.
Yes, and also, like, if you haven't, like, I'm right now listening to the two-parter that Red Handed did on the update for the Long Island serial killer for, Gilgo Beach. Man, it's really good because it's like I was obsessed with this case. I've always been obsessed with this case. And I've listened to like a couple of other podcasts and watched some documentaries about it, which are all really good. But now that they've caught someone, mm-hmm. like having to look at it from a whole new perspective is super interesting.
Yeah.
And like it's still, there's still so many questions because right. like so many, it's fascinating. So, get on it, true crime people. Like,
you love
get
true
on
crime.
It. I mean, it's one of those stories, though. It's got everything, like
twists and
turns and suspense. They are going to make a movie about it someday. I fucking guarantee it.
It'll be like next year. They're probably already in pre-production. Oh wait, no, they can't because like they're all striking, so they're not doing anything.
No,
right now.
Well, and I mean the
unless you did indie, so
you'd wait till you're gonna wait till this. We're gonna wait. They're gonna wait till the trial. Like, till at least fair. This guy. Yeah. Because, you know, there's a lot of controversy about whether or not he did all of the killings.
Yeah.
And there is definitely, like, they did it in the first part. Like, they kind of broke it down. Not him specifically, but whether it's one person that killed everyone or if it's multiple people. And you could literally take it either way.
Yeah.
Like, he definitely killed some people, the right. guy that they arrested.
But was there more?
But there were other people that don't necessarily fit his MO, that don't yeah. necessarily fit the background. But then on the other hand, you could argue it the other way. So to me, yeah. that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Like, unless he confesses, and even then, like, if you're already going down for it, like, why not confess to everything and be epic?
Right.
So, like, not that being a serial killer is epic, but you know what I mean, from serial yeah. killer minds.
Yeah.
So, anyway, fascinating, can't wait to see what keeps happening. So, yeah, go out there and find yourself some updates on Lisk.
Lisk is his name?
No, that's short for Long Island Serial Killer. Which is stupid.
Yeah,
but
that's
yeah.
All right.
All right. All anyway, right. enough
All right.
of that.
All right. Well, hey, have a great Labor Day weekend. Your moms love you.
Bye.
Goodbye.